We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection. And the majority of the time, she will choose life. But they can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby or visit preborn.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Monday, September the 11th, 2023. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim.
All right, so this is September the 11th. We all know what happened in 2021, right? That's correct. Back then.
2001.
Excuse me, did I say 2021? Yes, I meant 2001. Mm-hmm. That's being commemorated.
It is 22 years ago, and people are remembering. You know, one of the things that they've done through the years has a memorial. They have people, this is in New York City, get up and name the names. It was close to 3,000 people died. And even though we're at the 22nd anniversary of this, was watching the coverage of it this morning, and they went through the live coverage that day as the events unfolded, the first airplane flying into the first tower, et cetera, et cetera. It still left me with a shock, just like it was, because we were in the newsroom that morning. Everybody has a memory of where they were when it happened. And they started to talk about a plane headed towards the towers. And at first it looked like it may have been a Cessna that flew in because it was a long distance. But then you began to realize, and everybody who was covering this began to realize, no, this isn't an accident.
Right.
This is an attack. And I wanted to play you a little bit of the radio traffic that morning, the going back and forth, the 911 calls, and I'm not sure if it's in this montage, but the air traffic control trying to reach these airplanes, which have been taken over by these Islamic terrorists. So a little bit of down memory lane with this cut number one.
American 11, are you trying to call?
The cockpit is not answering the phone. Our number one is in staff, and our five is in staff.
Hey, I'm going to call from Washington. I am in a situation with American 11, a possible hijack.
What's going on, Benny? Aircraft is erratic again. Problems are erratic.
Yeah, that's just a little bit of the radio traffic that's going on that morning. And as
you, is it control tower traffic?
Some of this is 911 calls. People are calling in. It's unfolding. And then, of course, as everybody was still in shock about the first plane that went into the first tower, then the second one goes in. And then we have the Pentagon, and then we have what happened in Pennsylvania. So it is a day I hope we never do forget. But the memorials this morning, I think some of them, reading the names of those who died in New York, were the children of those moms, those dads who passed away. So it's always very moving.
Yeah, because 22 years later, you're talking about another generation having grown up. And little children are now, you know, in their 20s.
Yes.
And some older. It's like a Pearl Harbor event. It defines the nation. It defines an entire generation. And then others look back at it. And it is distinctly different in some ways, though, from Pearl Harbor, which was the prelude to our involvement in a world war. And once that was over and the Empire of Japan, I'm talking about in the Pacific, was defeated, then you kind of go back to normal and you go on with your lives. But this 9/11 having been a terrorist attack, and after the last 22 years, we understand that threat isn't over. This is not like a war is completed and now we're friends with Japan. And no, this is still out there, still capable of raising its head, and still capable of hurting people both here and abroad.
One of the other parts of this story is that President Joe Biden will not be at any of these ceremony sites today. He is returning from a meeting in Vietnam. He is going instead to a military base in Alaska. So he won't be in New York. He won't be at the Pentagon. He won't be in Pennsylvania. And so there are some people upset about that, but then there are other people who are saying, no, I'm okay. They're not fans of Joe Biden. This is Lieutenant Colonel Donald Arias in an interview with Fox talking about this. Cut number two.
It's no surprise to me that he's not coming to Ground Zero or any of the 9/11 sites. And quite frankly, I prefer he stay away anyway. We'll be spared one of his stories of how he can relate, like he did with the people in Lahaina, how he can relate because of a kitchen fire that singed his cat's whiskers. We can do without that. He sent that human laugh track, we known as the vice president, to Ground Zero to represent him. And again, I prefer she stay away as well. This is a day for family members, first responders, and true-hearted, stout-hearted patriots who want to honor those we lost in that life.
A little bit bitter.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, with all due respect, I would disagree. Who was this?
This is Lieutenant Colonel Donald Arias.
Listen, I understand the anger and, like you said, the bitterness, because the president has not shown himself to be a friend of the military. I think the president, whoever's the president and the vice president, need to point to, by their presence, the memory of what happened on that day. I fault the president or whoever's running his schedule for not having scheduled the trip to Vietnam early enough so that he could and the vice president could be back at Ground Zero sites. To me, that's appropriate. Whoever the president is, it's a time to set aside our partisan differences. It's a free country. He certainly has the right to not want the president there. I understand that as well.
Yeah.
Anyway. I got nothing to add, fellas.
Okay.
That's unusual, isn't it?
This is a day of those kinds of memories. Very sad. To this day, I mentioned this before. There's a movie about Flight 93.
Yes.
To this day, I can't watch it. I've tried to start watching it, but I can't. Because I know they're actors. I don't want to see those people die.
Yeah.
And
the bravery.
It was incredible bravery.
Yeah.
Being represented in that
Let's
movie.
Roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Todd, what gentleman's name?
Was it Todd Beamer?
Beamer?
Yeah, I think that was Beamer.
Yeah, his wife wrote a book.
That was what the movie and the book was based on.
Yeah,
were based on.
Yeah,
but our generation will never forget that day.
And to bring it home a little bit, Tim, we had a special that day. American Family Radio went on the air. And I think it's the longest special we've ever had, and rightly so. I think we were on the air for at least 12 hours, live coverage of all of this, because we understood our country was under attack in real time. And we talked to people like the late Adrian Rogers and others because the country needed some comfort as to what was going on.
Well, and we were attacked by Islamic jihadists.
Yes.
So it wasn't really a, quote, country that was attacking us or an army that was attacking us. It was an ideology acted out by these men who, ironically, trained many of them, several of them, they're trained in America to learn how to fly. Mm-hmm. And then they use that to hijack the planes and then to now, thank God that hasn't happened since. We haven't had a hijacking. I think people learned, you know, to be more aware on airplanes. And, you know, so that's good that that hasn't happened again. But, yeah, very tragic, sad day in our country's history, probably top ten in terms of the impact on our country and all the citizenry.
Yeah.
Days. I'm talking about single days.
You talk about our country changing. Flying changed.
Yep.
Yes.
Security changed. The Patriot Act has changed our country. I think it changed the way our intelligence branches even look at and behave towards American citizens in terms of always trying to and look, we do need to give credit to the FBI and other agencies because apparently they have done a pretty good job at intercepting, maybe we'll never know, intercepting some of these attempts to replicate those kinds of terrorist attacks. So I don't want this to just be overly critical, but the way our country behaves changed in the days following 9/11 as well.
I had to do an air trip back several weeks ago to Canada, and every time you get on an airplane now, you're reminded of procedures change. You know, they change the doors on the cockpit so that you cannot get in. You know, it's kind of locked from the inside. Well, the pilot, at one point in the trip, the pilot had to use the washroom. And so this is standard procedure now. The pilot comes out and a flight attendant goes into the cockpit with the co-pilot. They lock the door, but they put the food cart across the entrance into the, so nobody can come forward. The food cart is put in the way while the pilot is using the washroom. The pilot comes out, goes back, knocks on the door. They open the door from the inside, goes back into the cockpit. Flight attendant comes out, and then they remove the food cart over to the side again. And it was just, we have to do these things.
Yeah.
These procedures that are in place, and it was just a reminder once again. We live in a different world now.
Well, the three of us, remember when, before 9/11, you could wait at the gate.
Yes.
You
could say goodbye to a loved one.
You could say goodbye to a loved one or greet someone as they came off the plane.
Yeah.
Now that all changed.
Yeah.
Because
I remember that.
Yeah.
That would have been into the 70s even.
Yeah. Well, up until 9/11.
Yeah.
I we used to be able to do that. My wife and kids would see me off at the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get on, I'd board the plane, they'd leave, or they'd, you know, you'd wait for someone to deplane, and you could be all the way up to the gate without a ticket.
Yeah.
Without having been screened. And anyway.
If you're watching a movie today and you see the way it used to be, it's like, gee, that was nice.
Yes.
When you could, or that's a real old movie.
Yes.
Both. Well, I remember, you know, this would have been early 70s. I remember my dad going on to get on a plane here in Tupelo. And it was a little twin engine plane. It would take you to Memphis where you could connect to, you know, with real jets.
Right.
Right. But I mean, I remember he would just walk through a metal detector.
Mm-hmm.
That would be it. Then onto the plane.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember even if there was a time where there wasn't even a metal detector.
Oh yeah. I remember.
You remember, huh?
Oh
yeah. You just walk onto the, you just hand them your ticket and you walk onto the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there began to be a few hijackings. But one of them was like, wasn't one of the main themes, take me to Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh?
Hijack and go to the Cuba communist country.
Yeah. But it wasn't to hijack the plane to do a suicide mission.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was a whole new ball of wax.
Yeah. So you guys remember times when you didn't even have metal detectors?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like going in a movie.
Yeah.
Theater. Just hand them your ticket to get on the plane. You get on the plane.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right, Fred, next story.
Well, as I think I mentioned in our prep meeting this morning for the program, that what happened in Morocco this weekend has to be the most underreported earthquake. I checked just before coming into the studio. The death toll from the earthquake in Morocco is now over 2,100 individuals. It is the first earthquake in that North African country in 120 years. Seeing the pictures, it happened, what they're locating it. If you look at a map of Morocco, it is the worst pit area was a mountain range, and I think it's the Arias mountain range near Marrakesh. And that was the worst hit area. And it's going to take some time before they really realize how bad this was. But 6.8 on the Richter scale. And if you're familiar with that scale, once you get above 3, it's pretty bad. But to get to 6.8, because to go from a 4 to a 5 is an exponential increase. It's not just a bump.
Yeah.
It's a huge increase to go 4 to 5. So you can imagine you get up to 6.8, just how powerful this thing was.
Well, and the additional problem for a lot of these kinds of countries, now the U.S. has, especially in the West Coast to some extent, probably I guess other parts of the world as well, they try to institute regulations that they call it earthquake proofing. Nothing can completely proof buildings from the power of real strong earthquakes, but they do institute some of these regulations, which is more expensive. But when you go to poorer countries,
yes,
their buildings are very basic. They can't afford these, a lot of the steel that is used to reinforce and to allow buildings to sway rather than crumble. So the 2,000 deaths that you mentioned, that, as we said in our meeting this morning, our story meeting, that doesn't include people who are missing.
Yes,
that they can't find, and they're looking, as we speak, for survivors. But entire villages were reduced to rubble.
Yeah,
and that death toll is going to increase.
That's on the northern tip of Africa, on the Atlantic side.
That is correct.
Morocco.
It's right up against
Casablanca, right? Is the main capital there?
Yeah. And, the Rock of Gibraltar, the entrance into the Mediterranean. Is
between that and Spain, right?
It bumps right up against that, yes.
How many miles is there between Morocco and Spain there, where the Rock of Gibraltar? You know, the entrance into the Mediterranean, isn't that pretty narrow?
Very.
I think it is narrow.
Very narrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. We're not hearing much about that, but over 2,000 confirmed dead there in Morocco. You said the first earthquake at all in how long?
In that area, in 120 years.
Wow.
Yeah, 120 years.
Hmm.
So
the distance between Morocco and Spain, the shortest distance is 838 miles.
I don't want to be smarter than your Google thing there, but I don't think it's that far.
This distance calculator.
Yeah, I'm talking about 800 miles, you say? You're just quoting Google. I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that, but
according to the route planner, the shortest route between Morocco and Spain is 838 miles. So I'm just going,
click on there.
Now this says the closest distance between Spain and Morocco. This is Wikipedia. So the shortest distance, is 8.9 miles. So,
So help me with my math here.
Okay.
The first answer you gave, which is you were only quoting from Google.
And you put it on the spot. You just, it made me maybe Google it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's that the 8.9 miles is accurate. Not 800 miles from Spain to
this,
Morocco.
This may be traveling in terms of...
But it's very narrow entry from the Atlantic Ocean into what becomes the Mediterranean Sea. Right. That's what we're talking about.
This looks
which
like...
Which is where the Rock of Gibraltar is. Yes.
This is a travel to Madrid. So you're right. That's That's right. That's the internal.
But that tip right there almost makes it its own separate water. I mean, I guess it would. I don't know if the Mediterranean, it would probably still be considered a sea, but if there was a land connection between Spain and Morocco, would it be an ocean, the Mediterranean Ocean? Maybe it would have been. Who knows?
I'm not saying anything after that. You want me to Google the answer and then shoot me down when I read it? No, I am mistaken. I took the first thing. That is travel distance between a city in Morocco.
Right.
I don't know what the city is, and Madrid.
That's a life lesson for you.
It is. It is a life lesson.
Yeah.
Next time you ask, I'm not looking it up. That's the life lesson.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, that Rock of Gibraltar is that's used as a metaphor around the world. Somebody say, well, she's his Rock of Gibraltar.
Right.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen it, Fred?
No.
Have you?
I've not
Ed?
Been.
Okay. I've never been. I've probably flown over that area. I've been to the Middle East. To Israel and Jordan, but I've never been
to Spain. You never been to Spain or Morocco?
Any place in Spain, unless we I remember we touched down somewhere. But
you did in Spain?
I don't think so. I think it was just a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv.
Now, how do you quote not think so on a flight internationally, whether you touch down in Spain or not?
Man, you're brutal today.
It's a Monday.
You're brutal.
It's a Monday, and I'm
trying to remember because it was 2007. I'm wondering, it was an overnight flight.
Yeah. So you may have been asleep when you landed in Madrid. That's what you're saying.
I'm not. You know what? It's like arguing with my wife. I'm just going to be honest.
The more
I explain, the digger,
yeah, I know.
Deeper the hole I dig.
I sound like a prosecuting attorney. Right? Yeah. It's like Jack Smith.
This is the unrehearsed portion of TV.
Yeah. Actually, Ed and I were having a good morning together.
Yeah, we were.
Before I came in here and started prosecuting.
That's right.
All right. So I've never been to Spain either.
I do not recall, Counselor.
Barcelona looks like a beautiful city. I'd love to visit there in Madrid. And Madrid.
As far as I know, I've never been there.
Plane may have landed, but
yeah,
I wasn't aware of it.
Nobody told me.
I think I was watching one of the Twilight movies. And
they said something about we're landing, get off the plane if you want to or not.
I didn't even look out the window. It's just Europe.
I've been to a lot of countries in Europe, but I've not been to Spain. Have you been, Fred?
Have not. But those area, one of our staff members recently flew from Philadelphia to Lisbon, Portugal. So I like to find out the area. You know, Lisbon, Portugal looks great. I'd love to go there sometime. Beautiful area.
Talk about now that there was a historically destructive earthquake that just about leveled Lisbon, I think.
Yeah.
It was a couple centuries ago.
But it looks like beautiful weather during the summertime. I'm always thinking about places to go.
When it's hot here.
To get out of here in the summertime where it's a little bit better.
All right, we're going to take a break right here.
We sure are.
And we'll be back.
We'll be back. And Ed and I'll be friends again after this short break. Stay with us.
Did you know that every day, Preborn's network of clinics experiences 200 miracles? How? Preborn gives women with unplanned pregnancies a window into their womb through free ultrasounds, introducing them to the beautiful life growing inside. Once she meets her child inside her womb and hears their heartbeat, the chance of her baby's life doubles. Because of the generosity of you and me, who donate just $28 to sponsor an ultrasound, Preborn can do this. The cost of a dinner to save a life, the most worthwhile investment you can make. All gifts are tax deductible and go entirely to saving babies. Someday you may meet a baby that you rescued and you can give them a hug. Or maybe they'll give you a hug. Maybe they'll even save your life as they grow and pursue meaningful careers. One thing is for sure, you will never regret saving a child's life because life is a miracle. Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred here. We thank you for listening to AFR. If you want to send us an email, the address is comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Well, if you're looking for a vacation with a purpose for 2024, we've got some trips planned that we're going to lead here at American Family Radio. Tim Wildman, my wife Allison, and Stephen and Beth McDowell, the Providence Foundation, and some others. We're going to be going to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, early American history. We're going to see that part of the country, and then we're also going to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and George Washington's Mount Vernon. Those are two separate tours. They're back-to-back in case you want to come and do both of them. A lot of people, especially who come from long distances to join us in D.C., they want to spend the week with us, so we take care of you Saturday to Saturday. If you want to see all that I just described in 1 week, we would love to have you. For the itinerary, the price, the dates, everything you need to know about the 2024 trips, which are in June and September, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com. Everything you need to know about those trips. We're already getting people signed up and register for 2024. All right, Fred, next story.
I think Ed wanted to know, will the plane be stopping in Chattanooga on the way to Washington?
Going to interrogate me on that?
Oh,
I've never stopped in Chattanooga.
Boy, I hate
for a flight.
Mondays.
You know, huh?
I hate Mondays.
Yeah, well, don't talk to Chris Woodward because he didn't even know the song. Rainy days and Mondays. Mondays. He doesn't even know. But he's learning.
There was somebody in my Sunday school class who were listening to us. We were talking, giving Chris a hard time
about
knowing
the carpenters. Didn't even know who the carpenters were.
That's what stood out to them during the program. Chris's lack of knowledge of who the carpenters were.
Chris can earn all the credibility in the world as a newsman, but once he says, "I don't know who the carpenters are," with baby boomers, they're like going.
He's lost his credibility.
Right, street cred.
Yeah, street cred. I think
it's carpenter that, street cred.
Saying that Chris Woodward ever had street cred is probably a stretch. However,
poor fellow's not here to defend himself.
Which is when it's most fun,
right?
To pick on him.
All right, we did mention that President Joe Biden was in Vietnam for an economic conference. Now,
is that one of those G's? G conferences?
Yes.
G whiz?
G whiz conferences.
G golly?
Yes.
Well, G wally.
It's one of the G20 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you may be saying G whiz after you hear. President Biden had another moment when he was there. It was a news conference. I'm amazed at how we have Fox Studio on, and we start talking about stories, and it appears on the screen.
I think they listen to us.
Maybe that's what it is. Anyway, here is President Joe Biden at a news conference. I'll let you listen to it, and Fox's Joe Concha responding to it. Cut number 3.
But I tell you what, I don't know about you, but I'm going to go to bed.
What did you tell the prime minister this week?
Said he spoke to the number
to from China who was in India today?
Yeah, we talked about at the conference overall. It wasn't confrontational at all. You came up to me.
Thank you, everybody. This ends the press conference. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
How pathetic is this? How do Americans, even those who voted for this man, accept this sort of stuff anymore? It really is disturbing. And by the way, it's a movie we've seen time and time again. The president's staffers yelling at reporters, all in an effort to ensure the voters of this country don't get answers to simple questions.
Yeah, he was responding to a question from a reporter, and that the voice you heard was Karine Jean-Pierre. Right in the middle of his response said, "We're out of here. No more." And they usher him off, and as he said, he needs to go to bed.
Well, and we may play this clip, or maybe Steve Jordahl will.
We have this other one.
This too. Other one where he says, where he's constantly talking about what he's told to do?
Yes. Here's cut number
this
four.
This is this is at the same G20.
Yes.
I'm just following my orders here. Staff, if anybody haven't spoken to, I ain't calling on you. I said I had five questions. Anita from VOA.
I saw the video of this. He had a book in front of him. And once again, I guess Karine Jean-Pierre has decided which media will get the questions.
Right.
And he's got the five questions that he will be asked by these pre-approved reporters.
By the way, Steve Jordahl, I think, got that sound for us. There was a time, there was a segment of that.
9 seconds.
9 seconds where he said nothing. Steve had to trim that because
alarms
will go off here,
yes,
in our headquarters of our studio. If there is no sound played over the air for, 5 seconds, eight seconds? So that's Brent Creeley, our producer, telling me 8 seconds. 8 seconds of silence and alarms go off because our engineers then have to make sure we fix whatever's wrong.
So
we couldn't play the whole 9 seconds. As it really happened.
I think what happened right there, Biden saw Mitch McConnell and said, "I'll up you."
Because to your point, to be totally nonpartisan, Mitch McConnell has had
a couple times. He's gone stone silent, you know?
Yeah, staring.
Staring. What did he have, mini stroke or something like that?
We haven't been told.
Anyway, he's in trouble too.
Yeah.
As far as his fading, his mental capacities and everything. So I don't know. What do you think about 75 years old senators, congressmen, presidents? We have a youth limit, right? A youth minimum. In other words, you have to be
for president.
For president, you have to be 35, right?
I think 35.
35. What do you think about saying 75? You need to be forced to like pilots do. Pilots are forced to retire after 60. What do you think about that?
I'm not sure it would be constitutional to do it. However, you could have, at a certain age, you have to take a mental acuity test or whatever they would call it, competency test, and those results have to be made public. So that if President Biden is in the early stages of Alzheimer's or dementia, because President Reagan was, mm-hmm. I mean,
his last year or two in office.
Yeah. So the public has the right to know if the person, the chief executive of the country, is capable of doing the job.
But I think with Biden, everybody looks and goes, "No, I don't even need a test." It's obvious that the fella is fading and fading fast and does not have the mental capability, nor the I don't know about physical, but the mental capability of handling the most stressful job in the world. I say that. I don't know if it's the most stressful job in the world, but I mean, to be president of the United States and all that comes with it.
Right.
So
I would even be okay with someone who's president maybe having to walk slower because of age or because of, you know, maybe some sort of injury or so. That's fine as long as they're mentally able, mentally equipped to handle the stress.
Again, I don't get it except for just flat out ego. Why these people in Washington feel like they need to stay till they die.
Nancy Pelosi's running for re-election.
I know.
At 83.
83.
And she'll probably win.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going like, what? What more do you have to prove?
Right.
Why do you want to do this again? Mitch McConnell, he says he's not stepping down. He's I don't know if he means that. He's not stepping down right now. He says this is only a minor setback for him physically, and he's going to be – it's not as bad as it looks, so to speak. Then you got others. You know, they just keep on hanging on till, you know, as I say.
Feinstein?
Diane Feinstein, yeah. She's – have you seen her recently?
Yes.
Oh, she's in her – what is she, in her mid-80s too?
Yeah, I was just looking up Mitch McConnell. He's 81. Diane Feinstein – let me just look this up quickly. Nothing will go wrong when I look stuff up quickly. She's 90.
Diane Feinstein is 90.
90 years old.
She wouldn't remember whether she stopped in Madrid either. I wouldn't think. Huh? Would you? Huh? If you ask her today.
Yeah. There's a lot of that going around. You don't have to be 90.
But I'm just saying, I don't know. Well, these folks, maybe they just can't get over they can't give up the power. You think it's a power trip and they can't give it up?
You're not going to be president of AFA when you're 80, right?
Because
you want to enjoy life. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
70 is going to be it for me.
Ego. Nancy Pelosi said she's running for re-election because the Democratic Party, statewide and nationally, need her to raise money. Okay. So
Nancy Pelosi said that?
Yeah. So that's ego.
Right.
Okay. Now, I understand a lot of name recognition, a lot of influence, but you could step down and raise money, but she's running for re-election. I guess it's just the perks of being in D.C. and you're a senator or you're a congresswoman or what have you, and you're called senator or congresswoman or congressman.
I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see. We talked about this before. The next 6 to 12 months is going to be wild on the American political scene, unlike anything we've ever seen before.
Right.
Because Biden could be out because the Democrat Party sees what we're talking about, and they go, you know, we can't have him as our candidate. We're going to have somebody else. Anybody got any ideas? And Kamala Harris raises her hand. Hey, I'm vice president. I think I could do this. And then whoever's at the podium goes, next, anybody else got any other ideas?
Yeah. No, they're stuck because they're stuck with Kamala. In fact, Gavin Newsom, I think, here recently said he was not running. Now, that doesn't mean he can't be drafted by the convention should Joe Biden have to step down in the middle of whatever. But Gavin Newsom said he is not running against President Biden. And I think he said it's Kamala's turn. So they're stuck. They have to either somehow get Joe Biden to step aside. If he doesn't want to, they're going to have to run him as their main candidate. And then if something happens, it's Kamala's turn. How does the Democratic Party say, we don't want a woman of color who has served the president faithfully?
Yeah.
They're stuck.
They got a mess over there. And then you got the Republican side where former President Trump, he's going to be in courtrooms.
Right.
I mean, all year, basically.
Yeah.
He's going to be in the courtroom all year, various and sundry courtrooms, with those cases that have been talked about a lot. So, you know, they got their – so what are the – you know, Republicans, they're going to be voting for their – they're going to be in a primary season, and Trump's the leader there by far, if you believe the polls. So are the Republicans going to elect somebody that's might be ineligible?
It is.
Isn't that crazy it's going to be?
It's circus quality in 2024, just in terms of all that could be going on.
I don't think a lot of conservative media pundits are being honest or forthright. Honest is maybe not the right word, as if they're being dishonest. I don't think they're being forthright with the potential legal problems that President Trump has. I mean, there's people may say, well, it's a witch hunt, and yeah, it may be, but they're extremely serious.
The witch hunters.
Yes, the charges. I mean, we're talking about 91 felony charges, right?
I think total.
And so, court cases going on in Florida, D.C. You got the Georgia D.A. over the Fulton County D.A. over there. You know, she's got her own case against him and others. It's perilous as far as his legal risk right now. I'm talking about former President Trump. So it's going to be, like I said, the next 6 to 12 months, it's going to be unlike anything we've ever seen on the American political scene on both sides, Republicans and the Democrats.
Right.
And of course you've got a divided House of Representatives. The Republicans have a 5-6 vote margin. Kevin McCarthy's, you know, who knows whether he'll be speaker
right
any longer. You got the United States Senate, who is almost equally divided. You've got big Senate races coming up next year, next November. So, you know, President Trump, he's 77.
Right.
It's no spring chicken. So it's going to be crazy. Crazy to see what happens. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, the governor of New Mexico is Democrat Michelle Grisham. There has been some violence in one of the major centers in New Mexico recently.
Like Albuquerque or something?
Albuquerque, I believe it is. And so over the weekend or late Friday, Governor Michelle Grisham announced that she was declaring an emergency, and she was suspending laws allowing citizens to openly and secretly carry guns in the state's largest city, Albuquerque, for a 30-day period. And she held a news conference on this, and she was confronted. Wait a minute, there is a Second Amendment in this country, and you don't have that right. Well, listen to what she had to say about that. Cut number 5.
You took an oath to the Constitution. Isn't it unconstitutional to say you cannot exercise your carry license?
With one exception, and that is if there's an emergency, and I've declared an emergency for a temporary amount of time, I can invoke additional powers. No constitutional right, in my view, including my oath, is intended to be absolute.
Wait a minute, though. You're talking about crimes. There are already laws against the crimes, so how are there rights?
I got it. But again, if I'm unsafe, who's standing up for that right? If this climate is so out of control, somebody should do something. I'm doing as much as I know to do.
Madam Governor, yep. Do you really think that criminals are going to hear this message and not carry a gun in Albuquerque on the streets for 30 days?
No. But here's what I do think. It's a pretty resounding message.
It's a pretty resounding message.
Wow.
Well, it's an illegal message. It's an illegal order. Listen, I'm going to quote from a Democrat. Can I be nonpartisan for a
Please
moment?
Please do. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is California Representative, Democratic Representative Ted Lieu. This is what he tweeted. I support gun safety laws. However, this order from the governor of New Mexico violates the U.S. Constitution. No state in the union can suspend the federal constitution. There is no such thing as a state public health emergency exception to the U.S. Constitution. That's from a Democrat.
Good for him. That's
yep.
a Democrat?
That's
oh,
a Democrat.
Yeah. And he's a liberal Democrat.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he even sees the danger of what she's doing
yes.
right there.
Yeah.
I've got to think that'll be challenged today immediately in their court or rescinded or she'll have to take that back. You can't do that. Huh?
No, that's illegal. It is a violation of the Constitution, which she swore an oath to uphold. I think she should be removed from office. I think she
absolutely
should be. Whatever the law is in New Mexico, if it has to be by recall or some sort of impeachment or whatever, she should be removed.
Aren't the Democrats now saying Governor DeSantis or President Trump were authoritarians? Remember that? They're being criticized for that, for being authoritarian. And here you have this woman, the governor of New Mexico. What's her name?
Grisham.
Yeah, Michelle Lujan.
And what is it? The reporter said, hey, do you think criminals are going to give up their guns for 30 days because you made a declaration here of gun suspension? No, she said. But they're going to get the message.
Listen, we've seen this. We've seen this from Democratic governors before, not the least of which was COVID. We're now seeing the results of some lawsuits where constitutional rights were infringed upon. But some of these Democratic governors seem to think that anytime there's an emergency, they can suspend the ability to, you know, you can't go to church, you can't assemble peacefully, all those kinds of things, because there's an emergency, quote unquote.
Yeah. Now, it is true that governors have the ability under their own state constitutions to use emergency powers.
Right.
In other words, to have martial law in face of a natural disaster or
curfews. You can institute curfews.
Things of that nature.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But even those have to be are only temporary, and they're for a purpose, as I've just mentioned. Not because a governor of a state says we're having a health emergency because people are being shot with guns in our state, so I'm going to tell law-abiding citizens you can't. What is she saying? You can't carry guns out in public? Or what is she saying? What's her declaration?
It's that New Mexico is a
open carry.
I believe that's an open carry state or concealed carry. It says that she temporarily suspended both open and concealed carry across Albuquerque under an emergency health order.
I think the law enforcement there, officials, sheriffs, and police chiefs are saying they're not going to enforce it.
Yeah.
That's what I've read.
Good.
Yeah, because it's flat out unconstitutional.
Right.
But I think this is a tool the Democrats have been using. They use it during COVID. Remember a few weeks ago, President Joe Biden was asked by a Weather Channel reporter, have you declared a state of emergency with regards to the climate? He says, yes, we've done that. And they're using it as a tool, they believe, to give them powers to order people to do certain things.
Yeah, well, you can take away, the one way you can get people to give up their liberty is to scare them to death.
Mm.
And that's what happened a lot of times during COVID. You scare people to death. You say you trade your liberty for security. That's a false argument, but they use it quite frequently.
Right.
The left does. I'm talking about. All right, we got about 4 minutes left.
Yes. Well,
tell everybody Alabama lost in football, because that is an earth-shattering story.
Texas
Longhorns beat Alabama. It's a credit to the University of Alabama and their football program when it's the lead story in the national news.
Yeah, that's right.
We have an earthquake in Morocco, huh?
Yeah.
But we have Alabama losing, breaking news, we have Alabama losing in football. So I think if Alabama loses again this season, then if I'm a psychiatrist, I'm moving to Alabama.
Because your business is going to be booming.
Business is about to boom. If you have another loss, if you have two more losses during this season, it'll be absolutely.
They won't know what to. Alabama fans just will not know what to do.
No,
if they have a three-loss season. I mean that's a great season for most teams.
Oh, 9-3.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's
not for Alabama.
It's gloom and doom.
Yeah,
I don't know. Okay. Who knows? You know, Alabama may bounce back and end up 11-1 or something like that. But it's just Texas beat them on Saturday night, and now Texas is ranked in the top
They were nine, I think.
Huh?
I think they're ranked number nine.
I think they're ranked number four now. I'm talking about the Longhorns.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey was there. Did you see him?
Uh-uh.
He was on the sidelines.
He's a big Texas fan.
Yeah, big Longhorns fan. All right, Fred.
All right. Very quick. We don't
you got
have
60 a... seconds now. Now
wow.
We talk football.
All right. You know, Loudoun County has been the center of the battle over, you know, public schools, and there's been so much going on. What happened? Parents found out what their kids are being taught in school, and a lot of people are giving credit to that for them changing from a Democrat state to a Republican state. Well, there's still repercussions from that. And in Loudoun County, there's a church there, Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia. They're still not satisfied with what's being taught in schools there, so they're opening up their church to be a school. And hundreds of parents have applied to get their kids in there. And, you know, the pastor concerned about critical race theory being taught, LGBTQ ideologies. And so, no, Cornerstone Christian Academy, new institution open for kindergarten to eighth grade students on August 22nd, just outside Middleburg, about an hour's drive from the nation's capital. So one has to wonder whether other churches will take that as a lead and say, you know, we complain about what's going on in public schools. Now churches, parents, what are you going to do about it? And apparently there, at least one location in Virginia, that church has decided, give us your kids. We'll give them a Christian education.
Well, I would like to do the, maybe we can do this not today, but the growth of Christian schools and the enrollment in Christian schools.
And homeschooling.
And homeschooling.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking that's continuing to soar.
Yes.
You know, in light of all the news stories that we've talked about here. Safety, lack of a good education in a lot of school districts, unfortunately. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.